Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, if you meet a person and don't recognise them, or if you don't remember what somebody looks like, it might not just be forgetfulness. Researchers at Bournemouth University say they've established that face blindness is a standalone medical condition. Sarah Bate is Professor of Psychology there. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Good afternoon.
Face blindness is essentially, would it be that, you know, you meet Mary yesterday, but today you meet Mary again and you don't recognise her?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's not only that people with face blindness have problems recognising people they've only just met, but they might not recognise their own family members, their spouse, their children, their siblings, and sometimes even their own face if they happen to catch a glimpse of themselves in a mirror or in a photograph.
You can imagine how that would cause people, or they might have, if you're born with this, you must spend a lifetime somehow trying to navigate around that.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of people who experience face blindness actually don't realise until later in life. So it might be when they go to university or they go into a big organisation for employment and they meet lots of people for the first time. And then they suddenly have this aha moment when they realise, oh, other people actually can use the face to recognise others, and they're not just using things like hairstyle or accessories and all these things that they've used for their whole life. But this is particularly the case for people who are born with the condition because they've never experienced normal face recognition, so they have no point of comparison.
Would it also mean if you're born with it when you're a child, you mightn't recognise your parents? You're coming out of school and you don't know what your parents look like.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we work with a large number of children with face blindness, and teachers and educators have to be particularly sensitive to issues of stranger danger in order to keep the children safe. If they're going on a school trip, they need to sort of make sure if the child happened to get lost from the group, that there'd be a specific plan for how they would deal with that. And then the flip of that, of course, is if the teacher has face blindness, that raises questions as well about how they could keep the children safe in such scenarios.
A teacher having face blindness, I would imagine, you don't know who any, you walk in front of a classroom of kids every day, you don't know who any of them are. Oh my gosh. Does it come in a range, Sarah, in that you can have it very severely, or, you know, and, you know, so it kind of, there's a range of experience there for people, or a range of difficulty to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the people we meet do say to us, oh, I think I might just experience a very mild form of the condition. Whereas others say, wow, this is having a really big impact on my life and I can't even recognise my family members. But one of the issues for us as researchers is actually trying to work out whether some people genuinely only experience a mild form of the condition, or whether it's the fact that they've actually become very good at coping with it. So you might think about it in the same way as somebody who's blind and how they come up with all different compensatory strategies, how they use their other senses and so on. And we hear the most remarkable stories from people with face blindness about how they cope with the condition in everyday life. One really fascinating one, I met a woman who told me she recognises people by their wedding rings. And she says that, I know it's absolutely amazing, but she said it's the most stable thing because it's one thing people don't tend to take off or change about their appearance. So they might change their hairstyle, or they might, you know, swap their handbag or change their clothes or whatever, but wedding rings tend to be always there. And she found that a really good cue. So absolutely, different ranges of experiences, but whether those are genuine differences in ability or people's ability to cope is what we're really looking at.
Yeah, that's quite extraordinary then, because on the one hand, that woman had to memorise what people's wedding rings look like so she could tell who was who, but she can't recognise a face. Now, is it a genetic condition, is it known?
So we work with quite a large number of people where we know it travels in their family. So we've got at least two generations of family members who are affected. Very recently, we worked with a family where there were five adult siblings who were all affected Their mother, who'd actually passed away by the time we met the family, so we couldn't actually test her, but they suspected she had face blindness before them. And then some of their children were also affected. In a lot of other people, there is no family connection. So it's something which just seems to just develop abnormally. So for whatever reason, a person doesn't develop the skills to recognise faces. So we're probably looking at about a 50-50 split in terms of the cases that we see, which we believe are genetic, and those which seem to be just atypical development.
Mm. And are there any possible other causes of this? I mean, if one had a brain injury, for instance, could it cause it?
Yeah, that's correct. So very rarely people do acquire face blindness following a brain injury. And this is the form of face blindness which has been in the literature for well over a century. And you can look back even in popular literature. So you can look at the writings of Lewis Carroll, for example, and he actually portrayed some of his characters as perhaps having face blindness. And that was apparently based on his own experience where he couldn't recognise faces. And there are a lot of reports of soldiers coming back from the wars, World War One and World War Two, with traumatic brain injuries, which was where the medical term for face blindness, which is prosopagnosia, where that was first actually coined. So very rarely that does happen. There's a region of the brain which is just above our right ear, called the fusiform face area. And it's when that area is damaged that people do then experience face blindness, having had previously normal face recognition skills.
Yeah. The and in terms of the percentage of the population that this affects, is it your contention now it's probably more than what was previously thought?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So for the acquired form, we know that's extremely rare. So only a handful of individuals seem to experience that. But for this developmental sort, which we've been looking into, traditionally, it had been estimated about 2% of the population experienced the condition, which is 1 in 50 people, which is really common. What our recent research actually showed was we applied a different sort of statistical technique to our data. So we looked at the performance of a really large number of people with this developmental form of face blindness and compared them to a really large sample from the typical population. And this technique, called taxometric analysis, it actually shows you where the actual cutoff might be. And this actually showed us that even these people that are telling us they've got quite mild symptoms seem to be the standalone group from the typical population. So we think it could be as many as 5 or 6% of the population might experience the condition. And our analyses are telling us that, yes, these are actually a different group from the typical population, and they're not just the bottom end of normal.
My word. One of our listeners actually says, my friend has face blindness. I've known him since I was 7. He's never had great eyesight, so we always assumed that was the issue, until he told us, and he only recognises us from across the street by our walk or our mannerisms, which again goes back to the woman with the wedding ring you were talking about. Now, people, and so we're nowhere near, I assume, any sort of treatment for face blindness.
No, we've done some investigations where we've done sort of like a brain training technique, where you get people to do lots and lots of practice trials on a computer, where we get them to do lots of attempts at recognizing faces. And we've had some limited success with that. And what we basically find is you've got a bit of a better chance with children. So the earlier you get somebody with face blindness, perhaps the better the chance you've got of bringing about some improvement. Which is typical with any sort of neuropsychological condition, while the brain's still developing. However, those improvements are quite small, so we by no means have a cure, if you like, for the condition. So what we tend to really advise is we give people lists of coping strategies, which we've created in collaboration with people who experience the condition, which gives tips really on how you might be able to compensate for it. So things like the wedding ring strategy being a real extreme example, but things like using the context of which you meet somebody in, perhaps introducing yourself when you first meet people in the hope that they're then say who they are back. If you're meeting somebody, arrange a very specific place so you know exactly where that person will be, so you can find them straight away.
Yeah.
So all sorts of things like that.
Because it must also be, it strikes me, it has the potential to be hugely socially isolating, because if you're going through life and failing to re-recognize people, their assumption, they wouldn't probably think it was face blindness. They just think, well, they're just being snotty to me for some reason.
Absolutely. And we hear those sorts of stories an awful lot. Social situations, romantic opportunities, of course, employment. People are really scared as well in their jobs to share the information that they have face blindness. And they really worry about making mistakes at work in case colleagues think that they're rude or a bit aloof. What really concerns us is the effect on children as well. So we do a lot of work because you can imagine face blind children really struggling to make friends. You might ask them to do a task like hand the homework back out at school, team sports. Mm. Here in the UK, we have school uniform, which have really strict requirements, which doesn't really give them any compensatory cues to hang on to. You know, all the kids do tend to dress and look very much the same at school. So the impact on children is really concerning, and it's where we are concentrating a lot of our efforts to really raise awareness of what the condition is and what we can do to support people that experience it.
Sarah, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Sarah Bate, Professor of Psychology at Bournemouth University.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.